All right, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, Cindy F. She is a good friend of mine and yours. And she called me up, 3 weeks ago and said, "Hey, how would you like to do something with me New Year's Eve?" I said, "Sure. Come and give your testimony at my AA meeting and we'll do something afterwards." So here she is.
Hi everybody, my name's Cindy and I am an alcoholic. And I want to welcome the newcomers. You know, I hope that you hear a message of hope, you know, and that when I share my story, how it was, that you can relate, you know, to the drinking, my drinking career and the trouble that it took me. And so we'll start with that. So I'm Cindy and I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in a family with three brothers and a dad and a mom, and my family is very loud. We're very loud people. We talk over each other, you know, nobody listens. We fight at the table, you know, that's what we do. You know, we wrestle and we throw down. That's what we do. That's the environment I grew up in. There's no filter. You know, we say what my dad would say what he felt and did what he meant. And, you know, if we didn't listen, there was consequences. And I had a lot of consequences because I didn't like to listen. You know, and looking back, I see that how that self-will took over in my life since I was a little girl. You know, I always wanted it my way. Always wanted it my way. I'd have those tantrums. And if I couldn't get his attention, you know, I would do whatever it took. And yeah, and that was a lot of disaster. And I remember also that we would tease each other. You know, my dad teased us a lot, you know, especially me. I would, during high school, I would say, "I want to go to a dance. Okay, so you have to do this. You got to wash the dishes. You got to mop the floor." And I would do all that, and he would say, "No." And he said, "Well, you got to do this, and you got to do that." And I would do it, and he wouldn't let me go. And he was really controlling with me and real strict. Well, my brothers got to do things, right? So I learned at an early age, well, I'm going to sleep over to friends and take my clothes and sneak out. And that's what I did. And I learned at an early age, too, that I liked to drink. I remember when my uncles would get together and have barbecues at my dad's house, I would, you know, "Go get me a beer." We'd go get it, and they'd open it, and I'd take a sip. And I would put the lemon on it like they did, and I enjoyed it. You know, I liked the effect that it started happening on me. And, you know, as I started getting a little older, my dad started pulling away from me. And I know now why, but back then I didn't. And you know what came through me a lot was rejection. A lot of rejection. And if you can relate to that, then you can relate to me, because I did whatever I had to do to get attention. You know, and growing up, I was always compared to my cousins because they always did good, the girls, you know, and they always followed the rules and they got the good grades. And I always was rejected because I could not meet up to their standards and I didn't want to and screw them, you know, and I started hating them and being jealous because, you know what, can't you hear me? I'm here. You know, love me for who I am and not for what you want me to be or want me to become. And that was hard. And I started hanging out with friends that would break rules. You know, I'm a rule breaker, and that's just the way it is. I'm undisciplined. You know, I have no understanding of whatever it is that I need to do. At a young age, we started playing that game where you'd stand behind me and somebody, I'd breathe real heavy, and then we'd faint. We'd started playing that game, and I liked it. You know, I want to do it again, man, do it again. You know, and we do that. And my mom didn't like me hanging out with this girl, so I knew that I could hang out with her when my mom was at work. You know, I remember walking home from school, and the neighbor friend would have a paper bag, and she'd be sniffing paint. But that's one thing, I didn't do that. But, you know, I was always attracted to that kind of crowd. You know, I remember getting into junior high, and then the Reds and the Pill Poppers were there, and the Stoners were in the front of the parking lot. The Lowriders were over here on the back. And I hung out with everybody. You know, I hung out with everybody because I could fit in because they had what I wanted. They had the drink or that drug that I needed to get. And I had an older brother that he would drink and smoke pot, and I knew where to go in his front pocket in the closet of his closet to steal the weed and go up to the football stadium and drink and smoke pot. And they would have, when you have brothers, their friends come over, right? So that's a good thing about being a sister. You get to know all the guys. And just friends. And cutting class, you know, cutting class. And going on to the football games on those router buses that they'd have and take you to different schools, the little schools. And I'm from a town in Fresno, a little town called Sanger. So they'd put us on there. We'd be drinking wine at Hills Farm, and we'd be drinking that, getting on the bus, and just all we did was walk up and down and meet the other guys from the other side of the football team or the schools. And it progressed. It started progressing, and it got worse. You know, cutting classes started happening more frequent. You know what I mean? So in January, midterm, my mom says, I think you need to leave, you know, because, or graduate midterm or go to get a job because I'm not attending school anymore. So I chose to get out, and I was 17 and I started working at the IRS. And every time, it didn't matter, no matter where I went, I was always attracted to those rule breakers. I always knew who was the drinkers. I always knew who was going to smoke pot. I always knew all that stuff. I don't know. It was like an attraction, and I'd always do that. And we'd go out at work, and we'd start taking those little daiquiris. They'd come in cans and popping them on our break and then going back, and I'd be smelling like, you know, liquor and booze and calling in sick when I'm not even scheduled to work. You know, right? And my boss would get, you know, Cindy, you know, and they'd be looking for me. And step one, she was saying about the unmanageability. And before I move on, I want to, well, you know, the birthday people, that's a big thing. Because when I came in and I started getting a couple of months and almost getting a year, people would clap for me. And I would say, you know, don't even clap because I'm going to upset you. You know what I mean? Don't, because I like rejection. You know what I mean? And if you start clapping for me, you're allowing yourself to come in and I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to hurt you because I don't know how to be loved and I don't know how to give love. I had to learn how to do that in here. But as my drinking started progressing, I started getting into other stuff to make me drink longer. And I started hanging out with, dating this guy that started dealing drugs. And that wasn't good for me. And I started staying away from my parents and from my brothers. And when I'd go around, I'd have bruises on my arms, you know, and because of the abuse that I was being taken from the individual that I was with. And my dad noticed that. And my dad would come out and, you know, my dad was a big man and I'm his little girl. And my dad is always my rock. No matter if he mistreated me or he treated me good, it's my rock. And as I started drinking more, I started doing more stuff than drinking. And the insanity of it was, you know, the wreckage of the cars. You know, not going to work, spending my check, you know, going out for 3-day runs. You know, not waking up, not knowing where I'm at, not knowing where my car was. Because, see, I rented my car out because it was either my car or my ass, right? So it started being my car. And not knowing where my car was, you know, and my kid, you know, that's right. I left him back. Yeah, he's with my parents. That's right. But when I'm doing drugs and I'm drinking, nothing matters to me. Nothing matters. You know, you don't matter to me. I'm going to step on you. You know, if you're on the ground, I'm going to step on you. I'm not going to walk around you. I'm not going to help you because it's all about me. It's about where am I going to get high next and what do I need to do to get that. And if you're in my way, I'm sorry, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to be there for you. And when I start getting sober and I realize that, you know, I got to drink and I got to use more because of what I'm doing to you and what I'm doing to myself, you know, that rejection. I can't even love myself. How in the hell am I going to love you? I can't even be a friend. What does a friend do? A friend's out there to help someone. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to take advantage of you. If you got money, I'm going to take your money, you know, and if I was with my friends and they went into the restroom and I started flirting with their boyfriend or their husband, it was on. I didn't care because all I cared about was drinking and using. That's it. And I'd do whatever it takes to do that. And I remember when back then we would write checks, you know, and I had a lot of hot checks out there, you know. And I remember when I would rent my car out and it wouldn't come back come back, because I was so out of it, and it's so easy to take advantage of somebody that's so out of it. I would call it stolen. I would call in that my car was stolen. And I remember one time they pulling me over, and I went to jail because my tags were not paid, and somebody had, back in that day, you could say, oh, I'm so-and-so, and I live here, and they wouldn't have your ID. So they had a bench warrant for me. So I went in, and they took me to jail, and all these girls are looking at me, and they're calling me a fiend and stuff, you know, and I'm like, man, and to make that phone call, you know, to let your dad know where his daughter is, you know, it's not very nice. And I remember coming out and thinking that my dad would tell me that I had a problem, but not seeing that, you know, not seeing that problem yet. You know, for this alcoholic, it took a lot of damage to do. And I remember coming in and out of treatment, and I did 5 treatments, you know, and I finally did the county one at CAP in Fresno out there on the west side. If you ever been out there, you know, you don't want to be out there on the west side, because the only reason why you're out there, we know why you're out there on the west side. So the unmanageability is that I can't drink. I'm powerless, you know, and it's like powerless. No, I can't give that up. I have power. I do. I have power. And I really had to get on my knees because I was tired of going in and out, being used and abused, in and out. Didn't know how to have a relationship. It was all about me, and I'm self-centered, and I'm selfish, and if I'm in a conversation, I come in, it's all about me, and I come into a room, and we're all about me, you know what I mean? We all want to be seen. We all want to be heard. And I had to get down on my knees, and I had to get down to women to help me. And I didn't like women, and I didn't like men, because they both use and abuse me, because that's what I did. And I remember going into meetings, and I didn't want to go into the book study meetings, because that's where all the solutions are, you see? And, you know, and I don't want to get into the solution yet because I'm still on the border. And I'd hang out with the group over here of the AA people trying to get it right, but we're still talking shit, you know. We're still in that chaos shit, and he dumped me, and I'll screw him and all this shit. And I had to get away from that, and I had to get in this group that are getting into the solution, and that they're doing things, and they're working the steps, and I'm afraid. Can't you see that I'm afraid? And if I allow you to come into my life, you're going to reject me, you're going to find out who I am, and you're not going to want to be around me. And that's hard. That is so hard for me. Very hard. And I had to come to step two. And I had to come to believe something bigger than me, that other than relationships and drugs, you know, and drinking, and my dad. Could be something bigger than me that's going to help me. And it was hard to find a God of my understanding, because they said it could be of your understanding. And I remember walking into a church, and I couldn't go through the double doors. And I was there in the courtyard there, and the guy came out and says, you know, do you need some help? And he sat there with me, and I couldn't go, because, see, you know, God, if you really know who I am, and you've seen where I've been, and you know what I do, why would you want me? You know, and they said I had to change. How do you change? How do you change what I am? How do you change this attitude of being lonely and dissolute and angry? Because with that rejection is a lot of anger. A lot of anger. And I didn't know, I didn't have the proper tools how to handle anger. You know, I like fight back, right? I'm loud, I'll scream, F you, you know, what are you doing? And because I can't handle truth. And when I came in, I had to start looking at the damage that I've done. You know, I'm not a victim anymore. You know, I played that role too long. And I had to see what I had become and the choices that I was making. And that's who I made that choice. You know, nobody put it up my nose or gave me the drinks. I did it. You know, I was the one at the bar hanging out, you know, and these holidays right now, I was at the bar. And I go, where's everybody at? They're at home, right? They're at home. And I didn't know how to do that. And my family, they stopped inviting me places and telling me that they were going to have gatherings because I was in there and I'd make a scene, you know, and I'd be having Chinese dinner with them and I'd be having nosebleeds, you know, because of the drugs and the drinking. I just didn't know how to be. You know, how do you be when all I know how to be is under the influence of something, you know, stronger than me, right? That makes me blinded. So anyway, when I started getting and finding out in step three, you know, making that decision, the ABC, you know, do I really believe that I have a problem and my life is unmanageable? And can I really believe and take this will and say, you know what? Okay, God, my God is love. My God is a spirit, his son, you know, it's just this, the spirit. And for me, okay, you're gonna have this, and I'm gonna get on my knees, and you're gonna do with me as thou wilt. You know, relieve me of this bondage that I have, because this bondage I have, it keeps me down, man. It keeps me down. I want to keep getting up. I want to do better, but it keeps getting me down because these memories, you know, of what I've done and where I've been, it's gonna fill my head up. You know, you're no good, Cindy. Shit, look what she did. Who are you kidding? You know, beat me down, all that negative talk. And it was going on for a long time. So every time somebody would clap, I didn't even want them to clap. Because see, I'm not even there at a year yet. I'm gonna hurt you, and I'm gonna if you know what I'm gonna do, you're not gonna wanna be around me. So it's easy for me to pick on you and get you so mad that you're gonna turn on me. Bam, I got you. See, I knew I was gonna get rejected again. I knew. And so I started finding a recovery there in Fresno. That's where I got sober, in Fresno. And these old timers loved me until I could love myself. Isn't that amazing? They loved me until I could love myself. I'd come in, you know, wasting my head all over the table and stuff. And they told me, keep coming back. You know, you're going to do it. What do you mean, keep coming back? And then, well, you know, help me understand this. You know, you don't need to understand. What you need to do is get in the book and keep coming to meetings. So I started doing that. But, you know, it's more than meetings. You know, it's more than meetings. It's being a service. It's being in a fellowship. It's the unity that we have in this AA program. You know, I have 29 years, you know, 29 years. And so you're a miracle. You made it. I go, no, it's a miracle that I stayed. That's a miracle that I stayed. It's a miracle because I'm here to carry the message of hope. There's hope. You know, if I can do it, I know you can do it. You know, and I had to let go of those old ideas that I was raised with. I wasn't raised with any tools. The tools that I was raised with, you fight. You don't trust nobody. You don't tell nobody nothing. You know what I mean? Nobody's listening to me. Nobody's talking about God. You know, and I had to let go of all those ideas and have new ideas. And the new ideas that came in were the people that were in recovery, that have recovered from this. The people that have worked the steps, the people that carry the message, that they go to the H&I, jails and institutions, they take and they go an hour away for a meeting. You know what I mean? When somebody needs help, man, I'm here. You may not like me, it's okay. But you know what I mean? I'm here to save your ass. You know, really, I'm here to save your ass, man. You know, you don't have to like me. I'm not going to say, tell you things that's going to be okay when you're telling me you're hurting. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. You know, I'm not going to pat your ass. I'm going to tell you, it's hard work. This is the hardest thing I ever had to do, is stay sober and work these steps. Are you kidding me? Nobody's behind me, and I go around my family and bring all this shit up that I did. You know, and my brothers are big, and they're, you know, slapping me around and telling me where I've been and what I've done. And how can I get over this? You know what? I had to stay away. I had to stay away because they couldn't be where I was. I had, every time I go back home, I got to meet them where they're at. Because, see, I got a program and they don't. I got a God of my understanding and they don't. And when I started coming, my dad started coming, because in order for him to see me, he had to come to meetings. My brother came into the program and he had some time, and then he went back out and he died. That was his choice, though. He died from the alcohol and the disease. I can't carry the alcoholic. I can only carry the message. You know, I can only carry the message of hope. And it's work. You got to do these steps, man. I'm telling you, you got to do them. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's easy for you to say shit. Shut up. Sit down. No, really, you got to do them. You got to do them. And, you know, that selfishness and of giving somebody, well, what? I remember coming in and I'd have 30 days. Well, what do I have? You got 29 days more than she does. Mm-hmm. And she wants to know how I kept 29 days sober. You know, and one day at a time, I keep coming to meetings. I still come to 2 to 3 meetings a day sometimes if I can. You know, I do each and I started. I'm going to start there at the Kansas jail there in SLO, I like that stuff because I can relate, you know, because I have the experience. I have the knowledge because I've worked the steps. I'm in the book. You know, I'm in the book. And it's a gift, you know? It's a gift that I can pass on to my son and that I have. He's 32. And we have a good relationship. You know, I remember him being in the car with me and I'd be selling his diapers. You know, I would sell his diapers and his milk and whatever he had. If he would be, I was drinking and I ran out, I'd give him a little bit of beer, calm him down because he'd be screaming and crying. But, you know, I can't pay attention to you right now because I'm doing what I do. Because this is me, I'm selfish and it's a selfish program, right? But we have to learn how to give back, you know, and it takes a lot for alcoholics to learn how to give back. But when you're working the program, you know, and the one thing too is that I don't always have to have the last answer. I don't always have to be right. And it hurts sometimes. The other day, you know, somebody was at work was on me. I'm like, you know, I wanted to say something. I feel these goosebumps come up me, right? Because like, you don't know who you're speaking with, right? And I just had to say, okay, Cindy, save me. God, save me from being angry. Save me from being angry. Save me from being angry. And keep repeating it myself. You know, and I just looked and I had to meet them where they're at. You know, I don't know what they're going through. And that was me. I don't have to have the last answer. I don't have to fight anymore. Because when you come into the program, it tells us we cease fighting everybody and everything. You know? And for me, I can't hold on to resentments because they kill us. We keep replaying that tape over and over and over, right? What they did to me, right? And it leads me out to drink. But I have to start playing that tape, what did I do to you, you know, to get me where I'm at. And I have to, especially when you make amends to people and work, and especially your parents. For me, my parents, that was hard. Because I remember knocking on the door and telling my dad that I needed help. You know, and he got up out of his room and he was in his underwear, right? And he got down with me. And I remember because one time it was on the west side and didn't know where my car was. I went into a gas station. I was so drunk and somebody gave me some pills. I was so out of it, but he managed to meet me and I was in the ER. And that's the first time I saw my dad on his knees crying because he couldn't help his daughter. You know, he couldn't help me. Nobody could help me. The person that had to help me was Cindy. Cindy had to help Cindy. I had to really admit defeat. And who wants to admit defeat? That means I'm weak. But it doesn't mean I'm weak. That means I have strength and I have courage to admit that when I'm under the barrel, you know, like they say. And I still do get under the barrel and it rolls, man, it rolls. And I've had my mom die and I had my brother die and I had my aunt die. And within 2 years. And when my mom was dying, you know, I got to be there with her, you know, and we talked about God and I laid down with her and she said, how come you're crying, mija? And I said, because I'm gonna miss this, you know, I'm gonna miss what we're doing right here, but I know where you're going. And she'd wipe my tears, you know, and I'd comb her hair for her. You know, and if I was drinking, I wouldn't be able to do that. And she calls me her mija, you know what I mean? And she goes, just carry the word and carry what you have to do. And I've been able to help people in my family, you know, people at work. I'm not afraid about my anonymity being broken because if it's going to help somebody, man, tell them, shit, come over. And I scared the shit out of people sometimes, though, you know what I mean? I do. And it's just like, I care. I care today. If you need a ride, I'm going to give you a ride. You know, if you're using me as a taxi, I'll let you know. You know, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. What does that mean? That I got to be responsible, that I got to get a job, that I have to pay my bills. And when, so when I got sober, I had some goals. And I said, well, I'm going to buy me a car. I bought a car, right? I bought a car. And I started saving my money. I said, I'm going to buy me a house. So me and my son, I bought a house. And then they said, Cindy, you know, I had to stay away from these meetings because there's men there, right? And I like guys. And don't you know how cute I am? I'm 28 and I'm coming in and I, you know, and I need a hookup. And it's, you know what? No, it was suggested I don't do that. So I didn't, you know, I didn't sleep around, do any of that stuff. So thank God. And one day this guy comes in and he's gotten out of the army and I see his cap. I go, like, tell my friend, go, go, who's that, man? He's looking fine, right? And she goes, oh, that's Bob. I go, Bob. She goes, yeah. So after the meeting, I went up there and I tapped him on the shoulder, because back in those days, we had to ask for phone numbers, right? They weren't handed out. I said, hey, my name's Cindy. I said, I like what you had to say. Can I get your number? And she looked at me surprised, right, because we're total opposite. He's this geek, right, goes to school and does all that shit, right? I'm this, you know, one that we're like this, right? And gangbanger and all this shit, you know, and we're totally opposite, but we have one thing in common. We like to drink, right? So I got his number and I call him up. I say, hey, you want to come over? And he says, well, what's going on? I said, I'm having a barbecue. Who's coming over? I go, nobody, just you. I don't want to know anybody else. I want to know who you are, you know? I'm like, come on. Shit, I scared him because he didn't come. You know, but later on we hooked up and we started dating and having coffee and tea, doing things that I normally wouldn't do, right? We wouldn't do that shit. So we did that, and we wanted to be friends, and, you know, we didn't want to do the lust part, right? Because once you do that, it's like, ugh, right? You know, moving on. But we didn't, and we became friends. And I remember that he was a nice guy, and I couldn't handle that. I couldn't handle, because he was too nice. He wasn't abusing me. He wasn't cussing me out. And he would open the doors for me. He would treat me like a lady that... that I was, that didn't know at that time that I was. And, you know, I was the kind of lady, he'd pick me up and I'd have my legs all over the damn counter hanging out the window and shit, but I learned how, I've learned since then how to sit right, you know? So I remember he'd get so close to me and like, he'd love me so much that it scared the shit out of me. Because, see, I'm used to rejection, right? You're going to reject me one day. So I'd set him up, and so I'd go up back out and relapse. I'd go back out, and I sabotage a relationship. So, you know, I'm going to do this so you can leave. So you're going to know what you're getting into, right? We're going to be upfront about this. And he didn't. He stuck around. And I remember one time sitting on the curb. You know, I was somewhere in Fresno, and I told him where I was, and he came to pick me up, and I was on the curb, man. I was on a three-day run, and I hadn't showered for about 2 days or something, and he picked me up. He found me and he picked me up and took me to a meeting, you know, and this went on for a long time, and he started going to school, and we just couldn't do it. We just couldn't do it, and we said, you know what, his sobriety meant more to him than I did, and that was a good thing, and I had to learn to grow up and be responsible, and I had to find myself. I couldn't find it in a relationship, and I found myself. And then we got together when I had 2 years, I believe. Brother Jeff called him and said, you know, Cindy's doing better, you know, and he'd come around, he'd call and start talking little by little, and by then I had kind of went on a couple of dates and stuff, and it wasn't the same, you know, because my heart wasn't there, and my heart was with him, and but I didn't want to bring them down, you know what I mean? I'm tired of bringing people down. You know, you're better without me. You know, you're going to do better without me. And we got back together, had 2 years, 3 years, and then dated, and then we got married. You know, we had a sober wedding, and it was beautiful. And we've been together for a long time, about 28 years. He's got 31 years of sobriety, and life has been good. Life has been really good, but there's been a lot of trials too, a lot of trials, because when two alcoholics get together, how do you do it? I have to have my own meeting, my own program, and he has to have his own. We don't start taking each other's inventory, but, you know, it's easy, yeah, right. We do, you know, he'll start telling me, and I'm like, you know, I'll start going off, you know, he was doing all that shit, and I got to calm down, and because I like to go off, right? And I have to calm down. He's with... Oh, Cindy, now come on, you know, take it easy, do all this. He's one of those, because we're totally opposite. You know, I like to just, and so I've learned not to. I'm still a work in progress, like they say, you know, we're a work in progress, right? And I'm trying to be more spiritual on that, to plane of spirituality. And they say, well, how do you get to that spirituality? I developed a better relationship with the God of my understanding. You know, I'm on my knees more now. You know, it started at maybe 2 minutes, now it's an hour. You know, I really get into the book, you know, I read it, and it's not about just getting into the work, it's, you know, really it's just helping another alcoholic, coming in here and not bragging about what you do, being humble. And for me, I've learned how to be humble in spirit. And what does that mean to me? That I've learned to listen more. You know, I don't have to do all the talking. Man, you don't have to notice me anymore, you know? I come in and I'm happy and I'm joyous and I'm free because it promised me when I did this, this was going to happen. I'm going to be happy, joyous, and free. People, man, you're always like that, laughing. Well, yeah. Because when I came in, I wasn't like that. I was, you know, like this and, you know, be quiet and crying and, no, look what they did to me, you know? And it's not like that anymore. You know, and they say, this program right here, it's outlined in here. It's outlined. And if you don't know, you know, somebody said, well, read the book. Well, why don't you come sit your ass down here and read it with me, right? Because you know what? There's a word right here I don't understand. But you know what? I'm not going to tell you that I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm not going to tell you that I don't know what it means. You know, because I have a little bit of pride. You know, shit, I got to look good when I'm reading this book. And they would tell me, Cindy, you know what that means? And I'd say, no, so okay, let's get the dictionary, and they have a dictionary, the AA dictionary, right? So we tell, okay, oh, okay, that's what it means. Oh, okay, now I know. So then we would reread it. And they said, well, read this page and start putting your name in there. So I'd start reading it. You know, I'm always irritable and I'm discontent. Man, I can't get along with anybody at work. My relationships, I don't know how to have a relationship because my feelings get hurt. Don't tell me what to do, right? When you tell me something to do, man, it flares up. Oh, you know, oh, hell no, you didn't tell me that, right? And I've learned. And I've learned by coming to meetings. I've learned by asking God to help me. Help me. I can't do this without my God. I can't. I can't do it with the unity of this group. You know, I can't. And the biggest thing for me is when I came in, I was tired. I was tired of being out there in the streets. You know, I was really tired. It didn't do nothing anymore. And when you start coming into the program, you're going to lose people. You're going to lose. They're going to make fun of us. That's okay because they're scared, you know, because I did that. I was afraid. I'd sit there and I was lonely. Can't you see me? Can't you tell that I want to be a part of, but I don't know how to raise my hand to be a part of? You know, I'm drowning. You know, and today when I see a newcomer, you know, I want you to come back. I want you to keep coming back until we can love you. You know, and you're going to be standing here and you're going to be carrying that message. And if you have children, they're going to see it. And we get to break that yoke, you know, that bondage they talk about, that chain, man, that's heavy. When I came in, you know, it's real heavy, right? And when you start telling your sins, you know, to me, that's step five, writing it, everybody knows they've read it anyway. What I've done, right, except for all that sex shit, you know, and the stealing and the cheating. And once you get it off your chest, you know, and then they'll share something with you, what they did. And then you're like, damn, right? And you start comparing shit, and then we start laughing like, you did that too? I'd be standing out there in Wells Fargo asking for a 20, and I come in here, can't even raise my damn hand for help. Golly, you know what I mean? Damn, stealing at thrift stores. Who does that shit? You know what I mean? And walk around with the tag still on there. But life is good, you know, and I want to close with this. This is what I like right here on this story. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, sense of duty. Two, it's a pleasure. Three, because in so doing, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. You guys want, all of you one day are gonna be up here and you're gonna be carrying the message of hope. Because our hope is that you keep coming back. My hope is that you get involved. My hope is that you raise your hand and say you need help. My hope is that you say, you know what, I need a ride. My hope is that you tell me, help me understand this book. You know, I may not know all the words. I quit school at sixth grade, eighth grade. I need help. Help me. Help me. Help me. Help me. Help me. Because today I'm responsible. Anytime, anywhere that somebody needs help, Cindy's responsible. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you, Cindy.